Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello there, everyone, and happy hump day. We're here today. I'm joined with Josh. Where's Scott? We don't
know.
Hello,
Ben Roy.
Where's Scott? Do you know where he is?
I think he's playing like Toy Story 3 or something daft like that. Probably getting killed on Demon's Souls, actually. Yeah. I'm almost certain that's what he's doing right now.
One day he'll be that game. I'll tell you what he's not playing, though. He's not playing Fallout 76, which we're here today to talk to everyone about. So Big Todd has recently had an interview with certain people around the web. And Josh, you've got some quotes today that we're going to sort of go off and go, did you really think that was a good idea in the first place, Mr. Fallout people? Who knows?
Yeah. Essentially, Todd Howard, like you said, Bethesda's Todd Howard, if you don't know. Somehow, even though he's like one of the biggest names in the gaming industry, he has been talking. Phil Spencer's Todd Howard now, not Don Matrix. He's had a sit down with The Guardian and gave an interview with The Guardian, essentially talking about, you know, his career, about Fallout 76 in particular, and about the future of The Elder Scrolls, the future of Starfield, the future of the company he's obviously associated with. And he's actually revealed quite a lot of interesting tidbits that I want to get into. But first and foremost, the big takeaway and the thing that we've titled this whole thing around is that he has admitted that Fallout 76 finally was a bit of a letdown. In fact, the direct quote was, "We let a lot of people down." This actually comes after an interview that he did last year where he kind of openly addressed the issues with the game as well. And he said that, you know, he realizes why some people were disappointed. He realizes that they did make some mistakes. But it's nice that we're this far out from Fallout 76's launch and the devs are kind of starting to be a little more frank about the realities of that game, because they're obviously very confident in its future. Like Todd, even in this interview, kind of reiterates that Bethesda is a company, they've got to keep working on multiplayer games, they've got to keep working on Fallout 76 in particular, and try to get players back and give the players that are there, you know, something to enjoy, something meaty to chew on, and kind of fix the mistakes. For me, it's potentially too little too late, but throughout this entire conversation, actually, every single quote that I would definitely will read out, I promise you, he sounds promising. It makes me more excited about the future of Bethesda than I have been in a long time. But I know you've been playing Fallout 76 recently, Ben Roy. I think you've stopped since. But what was your opinion going into it in 2020 as a new player?
So my opinion was it was on Game Pass and I already paid for that service, so I might as well delete a few games and give it a go. Game, it started off to feel like a Fallout, but I get why people thought it was dead. I mean, I never got to feel the game or see the game without NPCs, so there was kind of that Fallout-y-ish going on. But after a couple of quests in, it started to just feel a bit, I mean, it totally fits the scene, right? Because like, it's just set after first a lot of people coming out of the vault, but maybe it was just a bad setting and a bad idea altogether. Like, we know that they didn't have no NPCs for that reason. They probably had no NPCs because they just didn't want to put them in there, or they just wanted machines and computer terminals to work off. But yeah, it would just, after a while, it fell apart for me, and there were some quests where you do them with a friend, but your friend doesn't get the credit for them or complete them, so you've got to do them twice. And if it was built around being a multiplayer game, it should have really incorporated that. And it is now, it never made the jump to Xbox Series S for me. It's on my Xbox One original in the cupboard.
And really?
There it will remain on that hard drive in the cupboard as I bury this Xbox somewhere somewhere outside the city. And then I will leave it for 100 years for someone to dig up.
I like that. An awful time capsule. You'll just leave Fallout 76 installed, no other games, and someone's going to get that, and that's going to be the thing they remember us by 100 years later. It's funny that you should mention the thing about playing the game with friends, but it almost not feeling like you were playing the same game because they didn't get the credit for the missions and stuff. Because Todd was talking about, you know, whether or not they were going to incorporate multiplayer into, you know, follow-up games and how they kind of, and how people played Fallout 76, essentially. And he said, quote, "We have found that even if it's multiplayer, whether it's Elder Scrolls Online or Fallout 76, a large number of our players want to play it like a single-player game and not have the other players distract from it. Games handle multiplayer in different ways, and I think it all has merit." So that kind of like backs up what you said there, where it's kind of like this half-step measure where you can play it solo, because even if you have friends, they don't really impact it. And that's kind of like the confusing thing with Fallout 76. As a whole, at least for me, like, it's almost, it doesn't want to fully commit to being this big multiplayer thing, but it also kind of, you know, is too far removed from the single player experience that we love that it doesn't satisfy that itch either. At least that's the vibe I get from it, at least in its current form. I know it might be better now.
And if you die, there's no really sort of stakes because it doesn't reset the world and you go back, because obviously people are in that world. So what it does, it just plops you a little bit away from where you just had the fight. You lose some gear, but you can grab it if you go back and kill the rest. And like that, if that continues, normally someone who's level 4 million comes across and just splats everything out of the way anyway. But it just seems so weird and disjointed, some of the sort of questioning. They boil down to, you find the last guy and he's around, he's stuck in a corner somewhere, and you've got to get this angle on him to shoot them and not fall down there yourself, or you get stuck there forever sort of thing. And it just became sort of a legit boring fetch quest. And if it was based around killing a certain character, as I said, your friend couldn't, or whoever you're playing couldn't get that. But if you were like, go to a computer terminal and press the button, they kind of worked. Yeah. But at the same time, there was one as well. I tell you this mission, I won't go into too much depth on the rest of them, but spoilers for anyone who wants to play it. But you get drunk at one point, you drink this like weird super Nuka-Cola, and I didn't realize that it wasn't, what was happening for me wasn't happening. So my friend had done it and it was triggering all these ghouls coming. I was like, what's going on? Then he disappeared, because in the game you pass out and then you wake up because you've walked away. You know, like on a Raji night out sort of thing. But that doesn't happen for you if you don't drink it as well. So I was just sitting there for a while and there's like, oh, I should probably drink this at my inventory as well. Then I had to do the exact same thing again, even though I had to survive those same ghouls that he had, because things like that, you know, that just, it was, even though it was designed to be played together and they wanted, but it was, well, sorry, it was designed to have microtransactions and it was designed to make people pay for it. But it just, none of it for me fundamentally worked, and I wouldn't want to see this in another Fallout game.
No, definitely. And you've touched upon something interesting about like the quests in general and going to, you know, a terminal and that being essentially it. I remember there was one quest that people were complaining about at launch, when you essentially have to collect a bunch of, I think it's Nuka-Cola bottles or the beer bottles or whatever. Yeah. And Todd kind of like commented on this kind of approach to gameplay, I suppose. And he was talking about like moving away from this linear design. He said, quote, "In our games, whenever we go really linear, when we say, here's the thing you must get, here's where you must go, it's not as successful. When we give the player a short-term, medium, and long-term goal, and then make sure they have a lot of options, and make sure that the game is reacting to them, that's when the player feels like, look at what I did, rather than a creator giving something to you, and you consuming it, you give something to the game." And I think that's really important, because that's an issue that I had, not with Fallout 76, because I didn't really play it, but Fallout 4 and kind of the more recent Bethesda titles, is that I felt like a lot of the mission design, especially with the procedurally generated kind of like Minutemen missions in Fallout 4, for instance, they were so basic and there wasn't much... It was so basic and there wasn't much to them. Like the whole enjoyment or the whole experience was literally just doing the objective, doing the thing, killing X amount of people or, you know, freeing someone or something like that. And the reason that I love Bethesda games isn't for that kind of design. It's not about the experiences being made up of a bunch of different missions. It's about that sense of exploration. It's about the sense of, I have options. I can put some points into charisma. I can talk my way through this, or I can sneak through it, or I can do whatever. And I felt like, again, with Fallout 4, even though I do genuinely love Fallout 4, that was, for me, like the beginning of them moving away from that. Like, charisma in that game, it's still kind of useful, but you don't really have the same option to complete missions that you did in previous titles. And that goes with pretty much all of the stats in that game. There's often one ideal outcome or one ideal scenario that the game kind of forces you into taking. So this is really promising to me. If they're going to try to get away from that, like that is, that makes me more excited about Starfield and The Elder Scrolls 6.
Yeah, because I think Fallout 4, if you just max that intelligence and say did like 80 on lockpick, you could pretty much do the game like without ever really having a bit of a fight. But yeah, like for me, it was always the exploration for Fallout, which is why which drew me in. Like, say, especially Fallout 3, man, going into those, and then New Vegas as well, going into those vaults and finding what had happened and how this vault had gone wrong and what the chest was here, and then finding these stories. Like, this is something that Fallout 76 could have done. They could have planted things around the environment to tell stories, like inanimate objects, like they did with so many other games, but it just didn't here at all. And like, sure, it was their biggest map ever, but that means there was even less in it, sort of thing. It just sort of like felt so sparse. And like, again, like I will never, like, I don't think every open world needs a fox around every corner to guide you somewhere.
Yeah.
But like at the same time, like especially a game when you're primarily on foot, like it should have at least, they should at least design a bit more like sort of like, so you're being guided and there's like breadcrumbs to trousers around to do sort of thing like that. Even like, even when the sections of the world get nuked, like I experienced that at one point, that just basically spawns a giant boss, and it wasn't really, and half the enemies were invisible for my friend until he was walking around, and then this giant like Brock Lesnar style thing was there, and I heard him scream, and I was like, what's going on? I'm coming the corner. And then all you had to do then was hide behind a metal link fence, and because there's no objects in that game really get destructed, you were kind of fine because it was just running at you the whole time. You would just shoot it.
Yeah, I think you've segued very nicely into the next and final quote, where Todd was talking about, I don't know, it's almost like, have you read this before we did this, Roy? It's almost like you know what's coming next. But Todd was on about essentially the scale of the games, and he was talking about when going forward, he wants to see less people chasing like these bigger than ever worlds, like scale over everything else, and more about like reactivity. In fact, he said, quote, I think chasing scale for scale's sake is not always the best goal. And again, I think that had crept in with Fallout 76 and even Fallout 4 to an extent, like I said, where the worlds were getting big because they were almost in a competition with people like, you know, CD Projekt Red and The Witcher, or even Just Cause, which obviously prides itself on having the biggest ever open world. And I feel like this is a very valuable lesson to learn, that bigger isn't always better. You could have like the biggest map in the world, and if you've got nothing interesting to do in it or nothing interesting to see, as is the case with Fallout 76 and the lack of that environmental storytelling, then it kind of becomes pointless. You could have used those resources better to create something more memorable within that space. So if it turns out that, you know, Starfield or The Elder Scrolls 6 doesn't have a map as big as Fallout 76, or isn't that much bigger, but instead they've gone all in on trying to create these stories within that map, and not just chasing scale, but they're chasing reactivity, like Todd says, to your actions and stuff. Like, again, I think everyone, you know, watching this, you've got some of the information, but you should go over to The Guardian and check out like this interview in general, because as a kind of disenfranchised Bethesda fan, this has almost won me round. And Todd, Big Todd, has burned me before with It Just Works and the likes, but he's saying all the right things here for me, at least, to get me back in the game, especially, you know, this is all on top of Microsoft's upcoming acquisition of ZeniMax as a whole. And with that and this, I think the future's promising, man. I hope the future's promising anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if Bethesda plant a new single-player Fallout game, or whenever we get Starfield or The Elder Scrolls, like, I mean, I can't help it. It's going to be money on the table. Like, they're going to have my money. But, like, again, if they try to do another one of these sort of, like, these let's just make it massive and fill it with humans, and I'm not going to be sort of down for it. And like, I think we've touched on this before, like maybe the podcast, but like, you can't, how, what is even Starfield going to be like? Is it going to basically be like an Outer Worlds where you're on a ship or a space station and you go to planets? Like, and then are they going to, this is why it's good, because hopefully they don't go, well, let's make four Fallout maps, because each planet is just another map like you would get in the original games. Like, yeah, that sound that could get so dangerous, and you could see like one of them being really rejected and have like nothing in, sort of thing. So yeah, I just, it sounds like we're all going in the right direction, but whenever you see Todd speak, there's no emotion on his face. He's like, he's being plugged back into the Matrix, and he's like, yeah, well, you're going to listen to me because I'm not on social media and I'm just going to go away after this and then look at my Indiana Jones memorabilia in my office, and you can't get me.
I think you're entirely spot on there, you know, and I love Todd, but I feel like the exact same way. It's almost like he gets plugged in for all these conferences or for these interviews, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is the classic. I miss this. I do genuinely miss it in a way, to be honest.
Yeah, I think. We just got to wait and see. Like, we always got to take everyone's words with a pinch of salt, because, like, you know, people, whenever Todd speaks, this could affect their, like, affect stock prices, for example. So, you know, it's like, this is the big thing. And if they're saying all the right things, it turns it in the right direction, because the money talks and all that. But yeah, it's hopeful rather than him going, nah, Starfield's going to be Starfield 76. Good luck.
Oh, God, do not ever call it that, please, Ben Roy. But I don't know what you guys think. Down in the comments below, do these quotes make you a bit more excited about either the future of Fallout 76 or the future of Bethesda in general? And do you miss Todd being at conferences, getting plugged back into the mainframe and potentially talking a load of BS? Let us know. And while you're down there, could you give us a like, share, subscribe, and head over to whatculture.com for more lists and news like this every single day. Even if you don't, I've been Josh. You can follow me on Twitter at Josh Brune, joined by Ben Roy, who you can follow on Twitter at
Ben Roy Turner, and I'll see you in 2076 when we play Starfield.
Even that's too soon, mate. Even that is way too soon. It's going to be well beyond that. Right, bye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.